We'll have Clint Sterner as soon as we track him down.
I don't know if you know what? I didn't organize with Clint whether he was supposed to call in or whether Ben was supposed to call
him. That's okay. Yeah.
This is what happens when you have the two former football players try to organize organizing a hit. When you gave me license to set this up, I'm like, oh, yeah, good luck with that, fella.
I said organizing a hit, and now I think about you and Clint organizing an actual hit on somebody and people being like, what happened? They shot each other. It was really weird.
Clint's waiting to do an interview with us in person in some parking lot in Pasadena right now.
Stand up.
And it probably makes sense based on whatever vague instructions I gave him.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Looks like Ben's lips are moving in there, so it looks like we may have Clint here on the hotline.
All the places in Houston that people might confuse for a place in California,
yeah,
which is the most deceiving? Pasadena? Bel Air? I feel like there's one more. Bel Air that are pretty close to Bel Air in California.
Yeah, both Bel Airs are nice. I think both Bel Airs are considered nice.
Pasadena's got a more industrial vibe than the Pasadena in California, but
here,
I'm not sure.
Here, yes, but I don't think Pasadena is considered like...
It's not like a garden spot in L.A.
California. Probably some decent equivalency going on there, yeah. Let's talk to Clint Sterner about these all-important topics. This I know, there is no Baytown in California. Unless you call San Francisco the Baytown, and then it's very different than the Baytown, Texas, that the Dirty Red is from. What's up, my friend? How are you?
Hey, man, you took the words right out of my mouth. I'm sitting there listening to that conversation. I'm not real sure what's like California, but I guarantee this old East Side ain't, baby.
No, and that's why we love it. So, Clint, good to talk to you, man. Of course, you can hear Clint 2-6 here on The Drive with Ron Hughley on Sports Radio 610. So I'm going to pose the question to you, Clint, that I put up on a poll yesterday. Your level of concern over this current C.J. Stroud shoulder situation, your choices are very concerned, somewhat concerned, no concern at all.
Well, look, I mean, for me, I think I've got to be very concerned anytime that we're talking C.J. Stroud, we're talking about his shoulder, elbow, hand, wrist on his throwing arm, and it lasts longer than a week. You know, that to me, that's the concern here is we're 4 months removed from action. Any kind of procedure that should have been done after the season as it pertains to injuries, you know, when he got hit a ton last year, that should be a thing of the past. And so I think you start connecting all the dots. I heard you guys talking a little bit about it yesterday, and you start connecting all the dots. I think for me personally, given who it is and what it is and how long it's lasted, I'm very concerned anytime that happens. I don't give a damn what time of year it is with C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, and I guess that's it's hard when we have just absolutely no clarity on the situation.
Yeah.
At what point, because I'm trying like hell not to be hyper-reactionary on this, but at what point do we maybe start to do we look in the offseason after this, after OTAs, if we don't see any Instagram stories or anything of CJ working out with the receivers, like, is there any point before training camp that we should really start to get nervous?
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. To your point, if you don't see any activity, if you don't, you know, if when they're asked about it, they're tight to vest with their answers in terms of, they asked him about Christian Harris. I don't know if that was yesterday or a couple of days ago, but they asked him about Christian Harris, and it's like, oh, no, he'll be ready for camp, man. He'll, you know, it's spot on. Nah, Christian's good. Christian's on schedule. This is good. And then CJ, everything's vague. And so as long as we're getting that vague response, Seth, I think there's a level of concern. I told B. Scott yesterday on our show, I mean, you know, there's very few similarities between me and CJ Stroud. One of them is we played the same position, and number two is I think we both had a work ethic and a desire to throw as much as we could and not miss a rep kind of thing. I threw a lot of footballs in my time. I took a lot of hits in my time. Never was general soreness something that kept me out or hung around for 10 days. Oh, you know, so that's the part to me. If we go, you know, mandatory minicamp and CJ's still not throwing, for me personally, I don't give a damn what time of year it is. My concern goes through the roof because this the general soreness thing doesn't last 2 weeks and 2+ weeks. And by the time we get to mandatory minicamp, according to what we do know, Seth, is it's been 2+ weeks or it's been 2.5+ weeks. That's not soreness when we're talking quarterback. quarterbacks, especially their shoulders, elbows, hands, wrists. We've got something they're concerned about at that point.
Yeah, I guess that's the other part. You know, sometimes every now and then they'll talk about just getting a dead arm in baseball. And every now and then you hear about it with a quarterback. But usually it's when it's like in the middle of a season or whatever, where there's been a bunch of reps, and that's not the typical kind of thing that happens to a quarterback in the off season, is it?
No. And here's the other thing. No, not at all. And you even look at the guys that it typically happens to at any point in time. When you're the action of throwing a football is significantly less violent than, let's call it, Lance McCullers or Hunter Brown and what those guys do. Pitching, right? I mean, they're so violent. It's so rough on their arms. And that's why you see all the Tommy John surgeries and you know, again, shoulder injuries and shoulder sorenesses that last for, who was it? Jose Urquidy that had a season long shoulder issue, last year. Mm-hmm. You know, you see that in those guys that have such a violent action. When you look at the quarterbacks, I think the reason you don't see the surgeries and so much of the dead arm stuff is because it's such a less violent action, and it's more of a full body, rotational, controlled, compact action. And on top of that, some people look at me and go, well, hell, Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen, those guys aren't compact. You're right. Those guys are different. Those guys are shortstops that are playing football. CJ Stroud is your prototypical pocket passing, full body action. I mean, there's nothing violent about his action. It is as pure as you want it to be when it comes to throwing a football. It is as full body as you want it to be throwing football. So I would be shocked if CJ Stroud were a guy that ever had arm issues because he was throwing too much. Mm. Not to say it couldn't happen, but I just think his action and the way he plays the position lends itself to, hey man, it's a full body action. The last thing that's going to go out on me is my arm. CJ Stroud's going to be a guy that's 70 years old and can throw it through a damn wall. Sean, I remember Wade Wilson was my quarterback coach in Dallas, and he ended up being a good friend for a while after that. But, Wade played 18, 19 years in the league, and nobody's putting him in the Hall of Fame and all that, but he was a really good quarterback. He was a pocket passing quarterback. I mean, he was mid 40s, maybe even knocking on 50 when I was with him. And you play catch with Wade, and it feels like you're playing catch with Dan Marino. Yeah. I mean, those guys, it's just a different animal, man. Those guys can absolutely spin it. It's usually the last thing that leaves their body, and I think C.J. Stroud is one of those
guys.
That's
interesting. Clint Sterner joining us here on Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. So, Clint, you were out at OTAs. We're going to get to some of what you saw here in a second, I'm sure. But just last thing on C.J., if he's missed potential snaps to throw the ball with teammates already with these OTAs. We got mandatory minicamp coming up next week. We'll see what happens there. And then training camp coming up. Considering that they're installing a new offense, how behind are they getting right now with CJ? Obviously the classroom and the film, they can do all that stuff. And CJ's got the walkie-talkie. But without being under center, like how behind, what's the potential for them getting behind in installing this offense right now?
Well, I mean, relatively speaking, he's definitely behind. You're either getting reps or you're not, right? And those reps are extremely valuable any way you slice it. But I think you mentioned the wide receivers, and that's really, to be honest with you, that's the last thing I'm worried about. CJ can fly those guys to California for 2 weeks before camp, and they can get right. The part that I'm worried about is the additional control of the offense, right? This year, the reps of going to the line of scrimmage. And I'll put it in layman's terms, just simple, because we've all heard quarterbacks on TV say, Mike's 59, Mike's 59, right? The reps of doing that, communicating it, having complete control of the offense and getting the offense out of a bad play and into a good play, that's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. The offensive line getting used to CJ's voice and CJ being the one that's doing all the communication, which it sounds like last year wasn't the case, all of that newness is the part that I'm worried about. The new center, like if Jake Andrews is the guy, I don't know if he is or not. I don't know why he's running, seems to be running with the ones, but him and Patterson, if Jake is the guy, those are valuable. 2 weeks worth of reps in OTAs in a team setting are valuable reps in terms of that communication. Those two guys, the center and the quarterback, need to, as the quarterback becomes more responsible, the center needs to see the game through the same lens. As long as they're on the same page, then everything else is going to be fine. The biggest problem last year with CJ, guys, as it comes to scheme and communication, was the pressure, yes, obviously, but CJ had no idea where the hell the pressure was coming. He was snapping the football and didn't know if he was protected to his left, protected to his right, didn't know where his hot routes were. That's him in the center seeing it through the same lens. So, yes, to answer your question, it's a big deal. And I'm worried about it now, much less in a month, but it's more about that interior offensive play versus the wide receivers, in my opinion.
Okay, I wanted to have you on our show because, you know, some people can only listen in the morning or in the afternoon, so I did want our listeners to hear your perspective on it because I know you have a really good one. But now that I'm thoroughly depressed, I want to move on to some of the other things, which I also wanted your input on because, you know, you obviously have a much keener eye for wide receivers than you than Sean and I do. One of the things you had tweeted was that Higgins out there at OTAs appears to have a different style game than Nico. And I'm just intrigued by that. Like, how is he different? How is he similar to Nico Collins?
Well, I think Nico has a similar game to your smaller bodied receivers. I think he's a great route runner. I think he's got great hands. I think he's great run after catch. I think he's a better route runner in general than people give him credit for. He gets in and out of his breaks better than a 6'4", 220 guy. I think it's the difference to me is more like when I look at, now this is a big comparison here, I'm not saying he's this guy, but stylistically, like to me, Higgins is more of an Evans guy, like looks long when he runs and like doesn't necessarily look like he's running that fast until you realize the guy that's running next to him, he's leaving him, you know, it's a longer, slower strides, but he's covering a lot of ground. He's a longer, wiry guy that I think he's going to be fine. Saying he's not a good route runner, but I just think Nico is Nico runs routes like a 5'11", 6 foot wide receiver. That's how good he is, right? I don't think Higgins is ever going to be that guy. I think Higgins is going to be a different kind of player to where he's going to be comfortable with the body contact and catching the ball over his outside shoulder and the back shoulder stuff and using his length more so than Nico. Nico really does. If you look at Nico stylistically, he doesn't use his length. Right. I mean, he uses his bulkiness and his strength in terms of catching balls and body position, but he doesn't use his length really. He doesn't depend on his length. I think Higgins is going to be a guy that is going to depend more on length. I think he's going to struggle. And again, struggle is all relative. I mean, Nico's really good at it. I think he's going to get big guys typically struggle getting in and out of their breaks, dropping their weight, the quarterback reading that and knowing when to let the football go. Those are typically struggles for your 6'4 wide receivers, and Nico struggles with none of that, and I would be shocked if Higgins didn't struggle with some of it. So it's just, yeah. I think stylistically they're totally different.
That makes sense. Okay, now the other one that I'm fighting against right now as I battle my CJ Stroud depression is this. I have a hard and fast rule. I refuse to get excited about rookie slot receivers during OTAs and training camp because they're seeing vanilla defenses, et cetera, et cetera. It's a mentally challenging the position to play as a rookie, and yet I'm finding myself getting excited about Jalen Knoll.
Well, I think you're spot on, but the reality of it is they're going to be forced into action. We heard D'Amico Ryan say, I think again yesterday or maybe the day before when D'Amico spoke to the media, you know, he mentioned Knoll and Higgins, and he said, well, look, I mean, we've had rookies here in the past that play right away, and he basically compared them or at least paralleled them to Lassiter and Bullock last year, which those are some those are some big rookie shoes to fill there. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be expected to play, but yeah, I think you're spot on, Seth. I get worried about the fact that we are going to end up depending on these guys. But as I watch practice, man, the Knoll kid, and again, I think you're spot on with, hey, these are vanilla coverages. We're not asking them to do much, but Seth, when it comes to the twitch, the getting in and out of your cuts, being really quarterback friendly, he's got that, man. It's licked. He's not like, to me, he's coming out of I think they're a little bit, not pro style, but they're a little bit more detail oriented. The receivers that have come out of there seem to be guys that are a little bit more pro ready than, let's call it, a Tank Dell that comes out of an air raid that's just out there running all over the field and making plays. I think there's a little bit more structure in what they were doing at Iowa State, and I think you can see that. But Jalen Knoll, to me, is the one of the two rookie receivers. Knoll is the one to me that I watch and I go, hey, man, he's going to be able to help us. He's going to be able to help us win and move the football immediately. I like him a lot, man.
I'm removing the restrictor plate. I am full bore into Jalen Knoll now.
Yes,
that's all
good.
I need. Yes.
Welcome to the club. All right. Yeah. Hey, Clint, before we get you out of here, you had eyes on a couple of the OTA sessions. We've talked predominantly about the offense in the last several minutes here. What's a big takeaway you had from watching this team defensively out at OTAs?
I think the biggest thing is Kamari Lassiter. I mean, other than just a 30,000-foot view of this secondary is going to be really good. I think Kamari Lassiter, I mean, it's time, guys, that you know, this is crazy coming from me because last year at this time I'm sitting there going, man, this kid's an inside corner. This kid's a nickel defender. And I was dead-ass wrong. He is an outside corner. He can do both, but he's definitely an outside corner. And more importantly, he's Will Anderson, guys. I mean, he is. It's time that we start talking about Kamari Lassiter in the same vein that we talk about Will Anderson when it comes to just naturally. You know, Seth, you've been around these guys. Most guys that work the way Will Anderson works, most guys, it's almost frowned upon of like, come on, man. I mean, we don't have pads on and you're pushing the tackle into the damn quarterback. Come on, man. You're over there, you know, this worker bee guy that's over there getting extra reps during the downtime with the coach, man. Whose ass are you kissing over there? You know, what are we doing here? And Will pulls it off of like, no, y'all get on my level or get the hell out of here. Like, Will is the legitimate, you want to talk about a pillar that they're building this organization around. Will is that guy. And I'm talking about from a player as well as a leader on and off the field, in every aspect of it. And I think it's time that we start talking about Lassiter in that same vein. Again, I don't know if he's going to stay at outside corner or play some nickel because I think he could probably help us and be a pro bowler and maybe even all pro at that nickel position fairly quickly. I mean, he's that caliber player and with those instincts. But I know off the field, Seth, I think Lassiter is one that D'Amico views as a again, a guy like Will Anderson that just sets the tone on a daily basis in every walk of playing football and hell off the field. So yeah. I think that's the thing to me, Sean, is just like, damn, man. I mean, this guy's and he sells it. It's real. It's authentic. It's not fake. And it's not some tough guy. It's not some worker bee, some kiss up. I mean, it's real, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and real quick, Clint, I guess that's the part that I'm intrigued by this year is that, hey, like, Jalen Petrie did some really good things in that I don't want to call it slot corner. I'll call it nickelback position. But there were times where, man, I want an actual cornerback at that slot corner. And is that one of the areas where maybe they can take a step forward this year is just having more versatility among the players they are using in the backfield? That, yeah, sometimes Kamari Lassiter is here for a few reps, even if it's only a few snaps a game. When it's Davante Adams or somebody else like that, that's your slot corner in that situation. But you can mix and match these guys interchangeably more.
Absolutely, I think the beauty of it's two things, right? Number one, obvious depth. If Jalen Petrie goes down and they do find whether it's a rookie corner out of USC or somebody else that steps up outside, you can move Kamari in, and now you're just as good, if not better, right? Number one. Number two, to your point. Is I think the flexibility of being able to play a guy that's got great instincts, but he's going to help you stop the run. He's going to help you play zone. He's going to help you. He can play, man, but he's going to help you do some things. He's going to play a little bit different nickel defender. And then all of a sudden, if a team like the Chargers did last year where it seemed like all they had was McConkey, right, you could move Stingley and you could shadow Stingley, or you could push Kamari Lassiter inside. You could bring in your third corner, and now you've got a guy in the slot that you can play man with. And you can attack that one receiver that's hurting you. You can attack him with Shadow and Stingley, or you can attack him by moving Lassiter in there. I just think it's another big-time weapon, more of an adjustment weapon probably at this point, but it's a big-time weapon for D'Amico Ryans if things, you know, if the original game plan isn't just spot on and if some offensive coordinator's got a bead on what we're doing and is picking out, you know, the matchup issue. Boy, D'Amico's got a chess move that he can make, and he just hadn't had that in the past.
That is the great Clint Sterner. You can hear him 2 o'clock today, 2 to 6 every day here on The Drive with Ron Hughley here on Sports Radio 610. And, Clint, you guys are going to be at Christian's tailgate on Highway 6 tomorrow for the crawfish circuit, right?
Come on, baby.
Let's go.
Hey, mud bugs and cold beer, baby. Let's go.
Let's go. That's life right there, man. Highway 6, Christian's tailgate tomorrow afternoon. If you're on the west side, go check out the fellas out there. Eat some bugs. Drink some beer. Academy Sports and Outdoors brings you the Crawfish Circuit. Clint, we appreciate it, brother. Appreciate you making time. Have a great show today. We'll be listening.
Hey, man. Miss seeing you guys. Always good. Thanks for having me. And let's have us a good Thursday, good Friday, good weekend, boys.
Let's do
it. Good.
Let's do it. All right. Thanks, Clint. We appreciate you. For some reason, Clint's southern drawl just makes the whole thing better. You know what I mean? Like C.J. Stroud with a shoulder issue, but being described by Clint, I feel like it's all going to be all right. We'll see. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Went a little over with Clint, but it was worth it. Coming back, is one of the staples of sports TV about to get a really bad makeover? We are going to discuss that. We'll hear audio from one of the staples of that staple coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Big thanks to Clint Sterner. Joined us for a nice segment at the top of the hour. If you want to listen to that podcast, Odyssey Rewind feature, all work very, very well for that. And, of course, you can hear Clint at 2 o'clock today on The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Inside the NBA, I'm a big Inside the NBA guy, Seth. I feel like as studio shows go, those are four guys that are having fun together and they color outside the lines very well.
Oh, yeah.
They're really good. Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, Shaq, and then Ernie Johnson does a phenomenal job of steering that ship.
Yeah, and they're unique. They're unique in studio shows. It just for one, just how unstructured and loose everything is.
Yeah.
And they just let those guys be exactly who they are. They're not trying to give hot takes. Now, the hot takes that you hear are pretty much just them giving the opinions that they would give just at a barbecue or in a barber shop or just as you're talking to them on the phone. Yes.
This is how you know a studio show is really good and successful. Is it when TNT, when Turner lost the rights to the NBA in the upcoming contract, most people were distraught about potentially losing Inside the NBA. It had nothing to do with it had no talk about we really love the TNT production of the game itself and it's how they distribute it. It was we're gonna lose Charles and Kenny and Shaq and Ernie. That was the big thing. Well, it turns out you won't as a viewer. Because ESPN is now they reached an agreement back when that they're going to actually carry Inside the NBA at times during the season. TNT is still trying to stay in the NBA game, even though they don't have games. Shaq and Kenny and Charles have all re-upped, and I think Ernie too, with Turner, with TNT. So they're going to be doing some sort of Inside the NBA version that's going to be on there. It's not necessarily going to – obviously, it's not going to be an adjunct to a game because they don't have games on TNT. If you're sitting there listening saying, this thing sounds like a big mess, this thing, it sounds like people are going out of their way to keep alive an awesome show in some version where it's going to be really watered down. That's kind of how Charles Barkley feels about it. Here was Charles Barkley on Dan Patrick's show talking about how TNT wanted they had the Inside the NBA team do a pilot for what the new Inside the NBA, where they can't use highlights or anything like that, is going to sound and look like.
Does the show look like the show? It's just, it's Inside the NBA, but it's on ESPN. Is that how you're positioning this?
Dan, we don't even know.
Okay, all right.
That's one of the reasons I was waiting, I don't know what we're doing. And then TNT is trying to do something stupid behind the scenes. We taped the pilot about a month ago. And it was the stupidest shit I've ever seen in my life. You know, because we're not going to be on ESPN as much as people think.
Wait, what do you mean you taped a pilot?
Well, because ESPN, because we're only probably going to be working for ESPN like half the time to one third of the time. So I think TNT wants to do something. And we taped a pilot about a month ago. And it was the stupidest shit ever.
Okay, so you're still going to do a show, an NBA show on TNT, and you're going to do a show on ESPN.
Yes.
Okay, good.
That's the crazy thing, Seth. It's not the network that they're going to be new to, ESPN, and presumably, you know, I think they're licensing that show to ESPN. I don't think Barkley and Shaq and all them are technically ESPN employees.
Yeah,
they're just going to be using the show Inside the NBA as an adjunct to their actual NBA games that they're going to be carrying. The crazy thing is, it's the company that they've been working for all these years, TNT, that had them do a pilot for a show. Because I guess that show is going to look and sound a little different now because they're not bumping up against NBA games, you know?
But it's going to be a different type of show.
I guess.
They just don't know what it is.
I mean, Charles doesn't even know.
It could end up being really good if they just keep it loose and everything. I trust TNT can do that. The ESPN side of it is they're going to be intermittent. I feel like it kind of screws up the flow of everything of what you expect.
Yeah.
It does. There's a part of Inside the NBA where it feels like you're just sitting around in your living room and these guys, it almost feels like they're in your living room.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're lucky enough to have Shaq and Kenny and Barkley and like those guys in your living room. And I don't know if you can do that as much when it's not as consistent as it
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Without highlights, obviously.
Right, right. I guess the way that ESPN delivers the Pat McAfee show, where they don't own it, it sounds like that's what this is going to be with Inside the NBA, and that they don't,
yeah,
ESPN doesn't.
That's the business side of it.
Yeah. Well, and here's where I was going with this, is that I watched the McAfee show at times before it was part of ESPN, and I watched the version that's now on the ESPN platforms, and I don't look at it and see it as drastically different. Like, I don't think ESPN has homogenized the Pat McAfee show.
Right.
And I hope my
hope
is
other than, like, there's oversight, or I guess, you know, like, McAfee never used to get in trouble for saying this or saying that or how they address certain topics or whatever when it was just him on the internet.
Yeah.
Where now you get a little bit more, you get a little bit more of that. I don't know. I don't watch it enough to know whether he's, like, more of a stuffed shirt now or not, or if he kept it loose.
Yeah.
I have zero clue.
Here's...
With Barkley, I don't know. It's not going to be, I don't trust that ESPN is going to take this and do the right thing with it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to end up feeling, they're going to try to keep it the same, but it's going to feel so unfamiliar that it's just not the same. And I don't know, life goes on. It's not the end of the world.
No, it's a TV show. It is what it is. But here's one more from Barkley, and then we'll react a little bit more to this. What will the show be called?
Man, first of all, I guess inside the NBA, I think, and I guess it's going to be just Inside the NBA on ESPN ABC. I think that's easy.
Okay.
But I think the show, I think the pilot is called Inside the NBA.
That's not confusing.
well, you know the thing that was hilarious about it, Dan? We didn't have any NBA.
You have no rights to the NBA, but you're inside the NBA.
That's right. We can't show highlights. We can't show highlights. So,
oh no,
we were sitting there for like an hour and a half taping this pilot, and we were looking at each other. What the hell are we doing?
So it sounds like they did the pilot and hardly talked to any NBA. This pilot needs to make it to the surface. I need to see this pilot. I would easily pay like $25 on pay-per-view this afternoon to watch the pilot that Charles just said was so horrific for TNT.
I think it might, though, the problem with it, it might have been a mess, but also awesome.
Yeah,
too.
No, that's what I mean. I
yeah,
think,
like, but even not just awesome because it's funny to watch and laugh at how stupid it is. There could be a chance that it's a mess, but that these guys do a better job with a mess than anybody else.
Yeah, my whole thing with this is I love Inside the NBA. It just feels like everybody involved is trying way too hard to keep it alive. And in the process, my fear is that you're going to get, instead of getting one great Inside the NBA, you're going to get two butchered versions of Inside the NBA. You're going to get going to get the ESPNized version, as you point out. Like, McAfee, it may not be quite what McAfee was before he got onto ESPN. You're going to get that version of Inside the NBA on ESPN, and you're going to get this version on TNT that's barely a basketball product because they can't show highlights or anything like that.
Right, right. It almost like it's going to be the Manning cast or something.
Yeah.
The highlights are overrated sometimes. It's not like the vast majority of the highlights of Inside the NBA are them breaking down highlights.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I enjoy more of the non-highlight breakdown stuff and everything than I do the, because let's be truthful. Sometimes they come back and it seems like either Shaq or Barkley hasn't actually even been watching the game. So it might be better off if Shaq's not saying something as they're playing highlights that completely contradict what Shaq is saying.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I just remember Chuck doing the college basketball tournament.
Yeah.
That's where you have to juggle like multiple games at one time. And whoever was hosting the studio, it might have been Ernie, whoever's hosting the studio show goes to Charles for a thought on the game they were all talking about. And Charles is like, sorry, I was watching Missouri and Pepperdine. Sorry about that. I am, that's my big concern. I feel like it's one of those things like I don't know what the analogy is here. Like, I feel like we're going to get two versions of Inside the NBA. Neither of them are going to be good.
Whatever happened to the show Barkley? Did he ever do it, or was it, they started to do a little bit where he actually interviewed real world people about serious stuff?
Oh,
and it was It might have lasted like three episodes or something.
A lot of these side projects that these guys have don't last very long because they realize, yeah, that's more time I have to spend doing this stuff. You know?
Yeah, and I better like go if I'm interviewing the foreign minister of defense or something. Then I better get my research down on this.
Yeah.
As opposed to just riffing on the stuff that I'm already watching anyway.
Someone says Pat McAfee got one of the bosses fired. If ESPN would tinker with it, Charles would leave. So they had to, they have to have kept it the same. We'll find out. Look, Charles, that's the thing. Like, it feels like Charles signed up to stay with Turner to like help save a lot of people's jobs. He's that kind of guy. He could have gone anywhere, and now he signs up to stay with Turner. And there was a point in this interview with Dan Patrick where Charles is like saying, maybe they're just having us do this version of Inside the NBA, so we're doing something on our contracts over here. It just it sounds like a big mess, and I hate that because it's one of my favorite things about basketball is that show.
It's the problem is, as much as people love to try to say, like, I never watch ESPN or anything anymore, you watch more than you realize.
Yeah.
It's you can try to boycott it, but, man, no, the fact of the matter is they have a massive amount of sports
it's like
content.
Boycotting electricity.
You might never watch SportsCenter anymore or anything, but, right, you're going to – it comes up against you.
Dude, it's if you're a sports fan, it's basically a utility. It's electric, water, running water. And ESPN, like those.
It is true. It's one of those things. It's like if you try to, I don't know, maybe you try to go gung ho into living a hippie lifestyle or something.
Good luck.
Like, good luck getting rid of all plastic in your life. ESPN is plastic.
It's plastic
and man-made chemicals.
Yep.
Like you can only get so much of it out of your life.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Final segment coming up. We'll set you up for the Astros game tonight. We will encourage you to get out and vote. We'll explain that. We'll find out what the guys got going on. On In the Loop in just a little bit. Stay there. We were talking earlier in the show. I don't know how we got on the topic, but you talked about that chef in the Johnny Depp movie that he shot because the enchiladas he made were so good that he was never going to eat anything better than that. So he just shot the chef and killed
Depp
him.
Depp shot the chef.
Yeah. So I said somewhat tongue-in-cheek that that's maybe a lesson that you don't want to be too great or too bad at anything, just sail right in the middle, and someone texts
you become a target
for if you're good, if you're one at one end of the extreme or the other. Texter says, for longevity's sake, it's best to be just above average, never below par, never a shooting star. You know, we've got these kids coming in here shortly from they're at a media camp for the summer at Strake Jesuit. You know, they're learning all about radio and TV and all the other you know, streaming and everything else that's going on. So they're coming up here to watch us do a little streaming, right, up here? A little radio and streaming.
Right, yeah. Tell them we're streamers.
We're streamers, yeah.
They're 17 years old. Just tell them we're streamers.
We're streamers.
We're not sports radio? No, nothing.
Is this good advice to give them, Seth, that take kids in life, just be above average? That's all.
There's something about running with the pack. There is something he said for knowing when to run with the pack and then when to push out ahead.
Yeah.
If you always want to, I'm sure all these kids have watched both of the movies about Steve Prefontaine and the cross country, the distance runner from the 1970s.
Yeah.
And that was one of his things. He always wanted to be out front.
Yeah.
And you got to learn to measure, okay, when do you really push versus when do you,
right,
when do you run with the pack?
Yes, that's big.
Yeah.
It's big.
It is. No, you know what? I remember talking to a Navy SEAL about that, about the whole, you know, when you're on during the SEAL training and everything, there is an element to like, man, you're part of a team here and you're part of a boat. And if you're trying to win every race and always be out in front and everything, it's not always ideal.
Mm-hmm.
That he said you want to be in the gray zone
mm-hmm.
of like, man, and then just, but the whole thing is you want to constantly be pushing yourself at a pace that's faster than everybody else's average pace. But you can't always be at an all-out sprint because then you're going to burn out and fatigue or fall away. So it's a matter of finding that balance of the Patriots back in the day with Belichick, their whole thing when they got to the playoffs was always you don't need to change your preparation for the playoffs at all. Because if you've been doing it right already, it's already better than everybody else and you're working harder than everybody else. But if you try to go above and beyond, then all of a sudden you're screwing up the whole system. So, yeah, I don't – like, it's depending on how you frame it, it could sound like bad advice or really good advice, but there's an element of pacing to everything else in life.
Yeah.
And the people who are really, really good tend to be really good at running at a slightly faster pace, but doing it more consistently over a longer period of time.
Yes.
That's the real challenge. Anybody can go out and have a Nike commercial type workout once.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people that just go out and have steady, solid workouts, even when they feel like crap.
Yes.
You don't have to act like the TV cameras are on all
this
the time.
This is a perfect segue into reminding people that today is a Framber Day.
Yes, you're right.
It's a perfect segue.
Not every game has to be a complete game.
Yeah.
You're not gonna pitch a no-hitter every single outing. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Living on the extremes can be very dicey. I think when Framber learned that living in the gray zone can be a good thing. And hopefully it's a good thing today.
No, it is a good lesson for life. Because I don't want to, like, I honestly get nervous when kids are listening or whatever. Yeah. There's a lot of nuance to it. The people who work really, really hard, it's not as, in anything in life, it's never as dramatic as it looks in the movies or on TV. The real stuff, like take a distance runner, for example.
Yeah.
It's not the one hard run or something that allows them to win the marathon. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that they stack those runs up over time and years, and they're more consistent with it.
Yep.
And it's just, it doesn't have to be as dramatic. It just has to be the consistency of it.
Good advice, man. It's good advice.
That's a lot harder to do than to just bust your butt every now and then.
Bust your butt.
Use a different part of the anatomy.
Yeah, we're giving advice to kids here, so it'll be a butt.
Yes, yes.
It'll be a butt. All right, so we got a Framber Day today. It's kind of a sneaky game, man. You don't want to go to Pittsburgh and lose 2 out of 3 to Pittsburgh, especially when you gave yourself the cushion of actually winning the hardest game of the 3 games, the one where you're going against Skeens. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still, I know it's early, but you're still in a dogfight with Seattle at the top of this thing. Like, tonight, Framber, go do your thing, and how about 4 runs tonight? Can we do that? 4 runs? Is that a little crazy, huh?
Huh? I don't look. We've had some nice little doses of some games where they've had extreme run production here and there, but they're still a well below average team in terms of just actually scoring runs. I don't. At some point, yes, I want to get to a point where I feel some level of actual confidence in my core.
Yes.
That you know what? They'll probably score 40 runs this series.
Yep.
Sure they will. They're coming into town and they're just with their big swinging bats and they're going to destroy these chumps.
I've arrived at the place where I'm like, until Yordan comes back, this team is just going to have to be a super gritty baseball team that wins games, you know, on the margins, that wins game, you know, by beating out infield hits, stringing hits together. They're just not a team that's going to beat a bunch of teams 9-2, you know?
Am I greedy? If I just ask Christian Walker to not strike out so much? Can I ask for a little? Please, sir, can I have a few, several fewer strikeouts?
The numbers right now would tell you you're being greedy, but I will tell you you're not being greedy. He's getting $20 million a year. He's getting $20 million a year. Stop striking out as much, all right? Christian Walker, can we do that? He was the one. So I saw the All-Star ballot had dropped yesterday. You know, I got like several emails about it, some from the Astros. Pretty much any team that I bought tickets to one of their games, I'm on their mailing list now. So I've got an email telling me to vote for every Twin on the ballot. That's the funniest thing. None of these teams shy away from the fact that they just want you to stuff the ballot box for your guys. Like, it's never like, hey, vote for the most deserving. It's like, no, vote for all the Twins. Vote for all. I got one from the Pirates. That was a big one. Like, okay, I'm going to vote for every Pirate on the All-Star ballot. I voted for all the Astros on there. I did when I submitted one of my 5 ballots that I'm allowed to submit per day, per MLB. Christian Walker was probably the one that I felt the most dirty voting for on the All-Star ballot. I would say. Yeah, just he's not even close to being deserving to be an All-Star right now.
But that was the one you felt most dirty about?
Yeah, most dirty about voting for the All-Star game. Like, because he's nowhere near an All-Star right now. I voted for all the Astros because I'm an Astro fan. You know, I stuffed it for the Astros. But Christian Walker was the one I'm like, ugh, I can't believe I'm hitting send on this right now.
It is. If you had just taken Christian Walker at the very beginning and said that, hey, Sean, a couple months from now, at the very beginning of this season, you're going to feel better about voting for Jake Myers for the All-Star game than Christian Walker.
You know, the funny thing about that is, Seth, about Jake Meyers is that Jose Altuve is listed as a second baseman on the All-Star ballot,
yeah,
which means he's got a better chance of getting voted in. He's got a better chance of getting voted in as a second baseman than an outfielder because there's not a lot of great second basemen in the American League. The flip side to that is if you stuck him in left field on the All-Star ballot, where he probably should be based on the number of games that that he's played, he's not even the best outfielder on the Astros right now. He's not even the best outfielder on his own team. Jake Meyers is actually more deserving of an All-Star vote than Jose Altuve is right now, without question. If you had told me at the beginning of the year that I wouldn't feel dirty voting for Jake Meyers for the All-Star team, I would have said, you are 100% wrong. But
You didn't feel kind of weird voting for Yiner Diaz? Was that the break between, like, okay, voting for Yiner versus voting for Christian? You had to make a decision. What do I feel dirtier about?
Yeah, I feel dirtier about Christian Walker just because his failures this year have failed the team a whole lot more than Yiner. Yiner's not been great. But I didn't feel great about voting for either of them. Cam Smith I enjoyed voting for because we met his mom. And she would encourage me to vote for
him. That's right, yeah. Yiner and Christian Walker are just about dead even in terms of their offensive production.
Yeah, exactly. They,
like, Yiner has a 642 OPS, Christian Walker 634. Yiner's OPS plus is 80, Christian Walker's is 78.
Yep.
Very eerily similar. Yeah. And again, not what you would have been hoping for or expecting when you doled out that salary to Christian Walker.
Jeremy Pena, I felt not dirty at all voting for him.
Jeremy Pena currently third amongst all baseball players, not just shortstops, in WAR and wins above replacement.
Yep.
And that is with a slow start to the season.
Yeah.
So, Jeremy Pena, man, you get tired of hearing about offseason adjustments and what guys are working on and everything because everybody is. But man, Pena just delivered.
Yeah, man.
And has been delivering.
I didn't realize his numbers were that good compared to the other shortstops. So the only shortstops that are on his level offensively right now or Jacob Wilson from the A's, and Bobby Witt Jr. is having a good year, not a boffo great year. Pena's got to make it, man. I really hope. And he's been awesome defensively. That's why his WAR is so high right now, 3.6.
I feel like a failure right now, this second.
John Lopez feels like a failure. Is it because the 10 best-dressed people in the building are in this studio right
the,
now?
The Straight Jesuit kids are here, and they're wearing sport coats and ties.
I know. That's our first lesson.
That's
piece
a core of advice. Essential. Yeah. You want
First
to make
piece
it in
of
sports?
Advice. Look at me.
Yeah.
Look at
me. Hey, guys, this is dressed up. All right. Exactly. It's a good looking group, man.
It is.
Good looking group. Yeah. Little media, summer media camp. So, and they're seeing how it's done. You know, they came to the place, they came to the factory to see how the sausage is made.
Right. Well, and the cool thing is that these kids go to Straight Jesuit, and Sean himself went to a Catholic university.
Did.
And he is ready and prepared to answer any of your theological
any
questions.
Any theology questions you got, Old Testament, New Testament.
Old Testament.
There's two Testaments, right?
And kids, I'm joking because nobody lets me down more in that regard than Sean T. Pendergast. Anytime I have a question about Catholicism, he just gives me that look like, what was that again?
It is. I'm a grave disappointment. Not just to Seth, but
don't look at
people.
Me, and I went to Catholic school for a while, too.
Hey, Crosstalk sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing. Is there no Reggie today?
There is a Reggie today somewhere.
Okay.
Somewhere.
All right. Well, those kids will just have to make a little pathway.
Probably
for
frightened
right
of these
there.
Young hooligans.
Exactly. He got hit with a sock full of pennies. Some straight Jesuit kid out in the hallway.
Gary Kubiak Field, right?
What's that?
At
Straight?
No, that's
he's St. Pius.
St. Pius. Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah.
You're going to get
Don't
the same,
ask me.
You're going to get the same treatment I did with Owen Daniels one time where Owen Daniels is from the same hometown that my kids went to high school in up in Naperville, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
My kids went to Naperville North. Owen Daniels, unbeknownst to me, went to Naperville Central, but I interviewed him one time. I'm like, oh, yeah, I hear you. Naperville North. He's like, I ain't a Husky. I'm a Warhawk, all right? Yeah, that's stuff. They get sensitive about that, man.
Do we, is the question of the day okay to ask in front of the kids here?
It's a good question.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
So what kind of pandering would Mike Tomlin have to do to get you and Houston to put money on a new building?
Oh, does this go back to David Sampson, the former Miami Marlins? I don't know if you saw this, Seth. The former Miami Marlins president, David Sampson, who's in the media now.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Told the story about how he went into like some of the poorest neighborhoods in Miami asking them to, you know, approve the taxes for a new stadium, which is this albatross now, this new stadium.
Yes.
Oh,
And it was, I don't want to give the quotes because it's going to sound bad coming from our mouths. But it was like, yeah, it sounded really, really awkward.
Yeah, he admitted it.
Yeah, so Reggie's going to line that all up.
Okay, so what type, so again, the question is what?
What kind of pandering, like to basically, to,
what
get,
I miss?
To get to you. The question of the day.
How would he
So like to- something other than just the actual yes. offer yeah. of what yes. the stadium will have or anything. How yeah, I would to- need him to I would need him to come out and he's going to have to do like a tour like give a speech to my little league team or something like that.
That's good. Yeah. I like that. I like that.
OG sauce and concessions.
That's a good one.
See, look, that's a man after my own heart. He's like, "How can I make this money?"
I know this is probably above Mike Tomlin's pay grade.
Yeah.
And you're like, people are probably like, what do you mean? He's the president of the team. Mm-hmm. The only person above him is ownership. I would need him to promise me gambling kiosks in the concourse.
Bingo.
Yeah, I need to be able to place wagers at halftime of that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As an adult.
Whereas Lopez wants bingo itself.
Yes, as an adult. Yes, you wait till you're 21 to do any of that, all right? But that's what I would need from him. I would need, that. That and Zevia at the concession stands. You know, I'm a big fan of the sugar-free soda. Yeah, I love Zevia. Yeah, so that's it. What about it's?
I already answered. Yeah, you're not gonna get. I'm like I'm kind of like when a comedian realizes there's a 13-year-old in the audience and it kind of frazzles you. You're like all right, I gotta. This is gonna be weird.
I want him to have a library.
I don't know what I'm about to say, but I know it's probably not appropriate.
Books. We need more books in the stadium.
The first four things that came to mind, I had to censor and edit immediately. Yeah.
Don't worry. We got Figgy on a moment like that yesterday where he might have possibly disclosed to any children that were in the car with their parents listening to Sports Radio 610.
I dumped it, though, that a particular entity
might not be actually. Actually real.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Figgy, you got to watch that.
I dumped it.
Okay. Like, the kids are out of school, you know?
Yeah.
That's probably the cleanest dump of anything that's happened on the radio.
Out of context, that's a crazy statement.
Certainly the most appropriate.
Yes. That's a good one. I'm looking forward to 10:40, right? Mm-hmm.
10:40? But I think I also want to take it to a different level. I sounded like the individual. What do you think would be necessary to pander to like the entire city of Houston? Because I feel like that's where, because I mean, that's what he was doing. He was like the city of Miami. He's like, I need the black vote. So we're going to the black church. And I feel like we can enter some pretty interesting territories.
I can't wait. All right.
Reginald, what's the most egregious example you've ever had where you could tell that a white person was trying real hard to show that they're, you know.
I like when they ask me anything, you know, Mexican-American or Hispanic comes up. Hey, Lopez.
Yeah. We just want an authentic perspective on it. That's all.
Hey, Lopez, what do you think?
Yeah.
I think for me, and it doesn't help that at one point in my life, the doppelganger that I got most often was Dave Chappelle. Mm-hmm. So like,
Oh boy.
I mean, I feel like you can take that a lot of places, and many people did. Many people have. So that's probably the one where it's like, you know, that Dave Chappelle bit. And I was like, you don't know that I liked it. You're right. You don't know it. I didn't know that ahead of time.
Do you know Dave Chappelle?
See, thankfully, I haven't gotten that one. That
are
one
you friends
been.
With him? All right, we are done. We'll get out of the fella's way here. We are out of time. Seth,
that time Seth was talking about Bokeem Woodbine.
Have you been caught up on this particular instance of Seth's face blindness towards Bokeem?
Oh, you weren't here, Sean. I'll explain it to you later. We don't need to relive that.
Okay.
I don't know. I was kind of hoping to relive that, but
yes,
it's fine.
We
it's
do.
Okay.
All right, we're done. We're out of time. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and a Tommy Pham to you.
And stay in school. Stay in school.
And work hard, but not too hard. Consistently.
He's not your daddy.
Consistently work harder than everybody, but not too much.
Meaty part of the curve, yes. All right, we're done. We're out of time. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey Sports Station. This young man's wondering why I'm looking at him. It's because what I'm reading is right above your head right there. Yeah, there you go. I'm not staring you down or anything.
No, you might have a particular interest
this
in that
kid gave
young
me
gentleman.
A look, all right?